Pets, Extract 3. Stan. As an adult, I had my first dog imposed on me. My girlfriend phoned me at work and broached the subject tentatively. You know, you said you would like a dog one day, and we both had family dogs when we were children. I replied in a non-committal fashion with a guarded yes. Why? Well, I've heard of one that's really nice and needs a home. It's not a puppy, it's a lurcher. At the time, this term meant nothing to me. I envisaged a dog with legs of different lengths so it walked with a gait. Undeterred, I was told the dog would be brought to see us the following weekend by the owners who'd rescued him and already had another large dog and a child and needed Pep, his name, to go to a good home. I envisaged a sort of small terrier and waited to see our actual potential pet, Pep, the following weekend with a calm air, having been assured we were under no real obligation. In my defence, I was young and naive. The following Saturday morning, a large estate car drew up in front of the house and the owner took out a large wicker bed before letting a huge, long-legged dog bound out of the rear door. They must really pamper their dog. He travels with his own bed. And no wonder they have to rehome little Pep if they have to feed that monster. Anyway, I pondered, where is little Pep? It was only when the owner walked down the path to our front door, carrying the huge wicker bed the size of a large cartwheel, that the truth of the situation gradually dawned on me. This huge creature was Pep. There was no small terrier-sized lurcher. Once the door was open, Pep marched in and sat down and eyed us up, or rather he looked down on us in a superior fashion, as his eye line was above ours when we were seated. So what breed is he actually? I nervously asked. He's an Irish Wolfhound Greyhound crossbreed and very friendly and intelligent. He loves children. He looked as if he could eat a couple of small ones for breakfast, I thought. Does he eat much? I asked. He eats anything. He has a good appetite. The truth of this we found later, which I'll relate shortly. He seemed at home and happy. A collar and a lead and an improbably large metal feeding bowl with a bag of dog meal were handed over, and the previous owners left after inviting us to phone if we had any more questions. We were now the owners of one of the largest dogs I'd ever seen. Question one, would he fit in the back of my Triumph Spitfire? Don't worry, my car's a hatchback, he can travel in that. So I was thinking my treasured two-seater would be redundant unless we went everywhere in convoy. I was worrying unnecessarily, as Stan, we never liked the name Pet, and the dog quickly learnt his new name, as true to his description he was very intelligent, adapted quickly to life with us and folded himself up in the space behind the seats of the Spitfire. From this position he would put his head between us and closely observe where we were going, only pausing to stick his wet nose in one of our ears, much to our alarm, but suddenly barking if he saw a dog, which with his hound's eyesight he inevitably spotted before we had, lending a new sense of drama to our journeys. We also found that when travelling with the hood down on the car, the wind would sometimes irritate his ears, so a sort of tube bobble hat was knitted for him, which he happily wore, not minding the hilarity it caused among some spectators in other cars or at the roadside. He had a regal air about him and rightly thought he could carry off this unusual canine sartorial look. I mentioned earlier that Stan had a healthy appetite and his previous owner said he ate anything. We were to have this confirmed some weeks later when we'd arranged for a week away in Gower. In preparation, we were defrosting the fridge and packing, and we went out to do some last-minute shopping and filling the car up with petrol. We'd given Stan a long run on the downs that morning, where he would tear up and down and swerve at the last minute in front of us. He had a speed approaching that of his half-greyhound ancestry, so we weren't surprised that he was fast asleep in his large basket when we went out. On our return, it was a different story. He appeared to have gone mad and greeted us at the door with a crazed expression, lips curled and slimy, showing large teeth and crouching with his tail between his legs. This was not his normal jolly greeting that the few short weeks of our acquaintance with him had led us to expect. Skirting around him, we found his behaviour was apparently one of guilt, as the kitchen was a scene of devastation. By a process of elimination, we concluded that from the worktop and open fridge, he consumed, amongst other things, 2 packets of defrosting vegetables, a large tub of butter spread, some eggs, and as a crowning glory, almost 3 pounds of Best Stilton, bought the previous weekend in a Nottingham market. That afternoon's journey down the M4 required frequent opening of the windows as he subjected the car to his cheesy breaths, and worse from the other end. By the time we reached Swansea in a friend's flat to stay the night before we collected the keys to our holiday cottage, we'd all but forgiven him. So we gave him his normal supper and a short walk in the park to air him before leaving him to sleep, while we went off for a quick curry supper, suggesting that it may not be wise for him to join us, even if they'd let him in. On our return, we found his appetite hadn't been completely sated, as the large fruit cake, baked and brought for our friend, had been extracted from our luggage and consumed, along with a proportion of the kitchen foil it was wrapped in. Our new companion was certainly some dog. We might have been alerted to his kleptomania had we received at the outset his Kennel Club certificate, which showed his registered name to be Pep Vagabond. Very apt. Still, now to us, he was Stan the man. The next discovery was a little more alarming, as despite his generally affable nature, he seemed to take exception to some dogs and would growl and bristle, and if challenged by them, use his speed and height to grab them by the neck and throw them upside down. This was very alarming and embarrassing, and the only consolation was this treatment was reserved for male dogs of a size and strength worth bothering with. Alsatians were a particular target, as anything smaller than a Labrador wasn't worth bothering with. It also appeared that the form of conflict was more like a judo bout, where once the opponent was upside down on the deck, Stan would withdraw, wagging his tail, leaving the other dog embarrassed and floored. When contacting the previous owners, they reluctantly admitted that this had been an occasional problem, but they'd hoped he'd grown out of it. Given that our vet, on giving Stan an early once-over, suggested he was at least 5 years old, this seemed unlikely. The most embarrassing incident was when we'd gone with a group of friends to a pub unknown to us outside Guildford and had settled down to a round of drinks with Stan asleep under our table after a long walk there. Unfortunately, the pub landlord owned a large German shepherd dog who casually emerged from behind the bar while the landlord had left to go to the cellar. Stan had not been completely asleep, and spotting this potential adversary, leapt up, overturning our table full of drinks, then overturned the shock-resistant dog before pursuing him behind the bar, where fortunately 2 of us were able to grab him and drag him back, not without some effort. The landlord, having locked his poor dog away, returned and offered to replace our drinks, as it was most out of character for his dog to attack another dog who was sleeping. We drank our drinks and rapidly left before anyone else present was able to provide an alternative, a more truthful version of events. I don't think we ever went to that pub again, with or without Stan. Returning to the topic of motoring, I noticed that when looking for some old photos of the car, I haven't been able to find a picture of Stan in his hat, although I have found one of him in the back of the car, wearing a straw hat that I don't think was his. I noticed that his occupation of the internal luggage space of the car had forced me to get a boot rack for going away trips, and I'd forgotten about this. I wasn't to realise this canine acquisition was the first of many compromises that would further influence my choice of cars for some years as we became serial dog owners. Stan was certainly a character. As well as his occasional canine judo bouts and food-based kleptomania, he had a musical side when the phone rang. On hearing the first ring, he would throw back his head and howl like the Hound of the Baskervilles, and would get so carried away that even when the phone had been picked up and ringing had ceased, he would carry on howling. This must have sounded bizarre to the caller, who would hear howling accompanied by shouts of, "Stan! Stan! Stan! Shut up!" This was bad enough at home, but as most landline phones have the same ringtone, he would repeat the performance in shops, pubs and cafes, leading to one of us rushing him outside to quell the unwelcome din. Stan, on the whole, was very sociable, and we took him everywhere with us, and because he seemed calm and quite self-possessed, was allowed into most places, usually sitting quietly, observing what was going on, although we were always had a slight nervousness that the ringing of a phone would bring on a bout of howling, or worse still, the entry of a male Alsatian dog would cause a different sort of bout. He liked children and all people. I think he was often weighing up whether they were a source of a snack, as he could smell any food a mile off and had a very healthy appetite. Other animals were a source of intrigue, and he always seemed curious for new experiences. He became great friends with a new pet acquisition, Vernon, a black rescued tomcat from the local animal sanctuary, where we'd be assured that this cat was quite used to dogs, having come from a dog-owning home. Whether this has been true, we never found out, but for the first few days, the new guest hid under a chair, only emerging for food and a brief rush to the garden once Stan was out of the room. Whether it was his size, as Stan would have towered over him, or just the new surroundings, but to our relief, they quickly became the best of friends, and in photos, they're often shown as virtually inseparable. Stan had a very aristocratic air about him, despite the lack of thoroughbred pedigree. The time predated digital photography, but we still have a large collection of photos of him, probably because he was our first dog that we'd owned together. He posed for photos and walked, even in his later years, with skip-along jaunt on his long legs. We once entered Stan in a non-pedigree class in a country park dog show, and I think his rosette was a result of a sympathy vote from the judge, who officiated in true Crufts Kennel Club style. I think she was even wearing brogues and a tweed jacket. By this stage, Stan was into his dotage and prone to emitting noxious odours from both ends. The judge had already decided not to encourage Stan up onto the table, although he would have managed it easily in one bound, still being quite sprightly when he felt like it. But then we had to quickly intervene in the judging process. As you see at Crufts, the judge reached to hold Stan's head to roll back his jowls to inspect his teeth. "Best not to do that," I exclaimed. "Is he dangerous?" was her worried reply, as she rapidly withdrew her hand. No, he has very strong breath, as well as the remains of an ice cream cone he'd been treated to as part of the afternoon out. Saying, "Okay," she moved to Stan's other end and reached to lift his tail. Why do they do that in dog shows? Haven't they ever smelt a dog fart? Another intervention advised against this, so we were relieved when, after a quick pat on his head and commenting that he was a handsome old gent, she moved to the next contestant, who was hopefully more fragrant. Nevertheless, she returned shortly afterwards with a consolation fourth place rosette, which Stan proudly wore, as you can see in the photo. I also seem to have a number of photographs of him in water, not swimming, but paddling, wading, or just lying down, presumably cooling off after a fast run or a dog judo bout.